Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Good morning.
Hi. It looks like we're not quite at quorum, so we'll give everybody another minute or so to join, and then we'll get started.
Hello.
Hi, Parviz. You're up now. We'd like to start the call with the Tiger Team update.
Okay.
Can you...
Should I go through the readout or the whole package? Readout, yeah?
Why don't we focus on the readout? We'd like to discuss with the whole team and get the Beijing package ready for the TSC so that as soon as we've finalized the new project approvals, we can finalize the architecture.
Sure. Okay. So you can see my screen, yeah? Or no?
Yes, we see it.
Okay. Thank you, Chris. So we have been working on adding more features and functionality to the package to make it ready for the R2 release and a set of recommendations that we are adding to the slide deck. Mainly, as you can see on this picture, we are using this pretty much. We are not adding any new functionality, but we are rearranging some of the functions and functional blocks to make sure that the relationship between the components is nicely captured. So this is going to be ready for any new features. So there are a couple of projects that have been approved recently by the TSC. But between now and the next milestone, we can gradually add those functions. For example, music, and I believe that real-time catalog is still pending the TSC approval. So we add those functions to this architecture picture. As you can see, since last time, we made some few changes. One of the changes that you can see here is the PNF, how that is captured in the diagram. And also, there was a notion of using Kubernetes as part of the OS layer, the hyperled OS layer set of functions. We added that as one of the options for the cloud variation that we are supporting in its architecture. Okay. The other change on this picture is pretty much adding the functions that are currently available and supported. Actually, there is a plan for support of those set of functions that for R2. So I'll go quickly through with the list of those functions. Okay. So this has been already presented to the ARC call, I guess, in the past. And there is, in terms of functionality and features, there is nothing specific to mention here. There was one comment that for DCAE, inside the DCAE, I guess there was a comment from Lucian that we need to show the correlation engine for Holm, which is already captured in the DCAE box, as you can see. Okay. As I said, for the Beijing release, the main focus is platform maturity. And this is, as I said, we are going to add any new project that we approved by TSC, including the two that I mentioned. There is also some of the formatting updates that I summarized. And the foundation for the long-term architecture is also captured. Which is mainly based on three main principles. That they are, I'm hearing some background noise. So could you please mute? Okay. The main focus for the long-term architecture is it has to be model-driven, microservices-based, and the architecture is designed to be modular. So that is our main fundamental principle for the long-term architecture on beyond release 2. And we have to make sure that we stick to this principle by bringing new contributions and new features to complete the architecture for long run. One of the key points that we have been working with the team is to make sure that at least for PTLs, they can make certain changes to improve APIs. The detail of the APIs and also the functional description of those would be reflected in the individual projects and their definition of the new features. But from an architecture perspective, we focus and we emphasize that certain APIs need to improve to make the architecture forward-looking and future-proof. One of the other things that we mentioned as the Tiger team for defining the architecture is using the modeling book and possibly anything that has been published so far by the modeling subcommittee, including the one that I believe was published like in December. The use of OOM for instantiation and registering with the microbus is already one of the focus areas that we mentioned. Okay, so these are pretty much the focal points for R2 implementation and also for the target architecture. There is a set of recommendations from Tiger team for the PTLs that captured in the next slide. As you can see, the team of the platform today for R2 is platform maturity and also all the metrics that are used to guarantee that the platform is carrier ready. Of course, the level of compliance with the carrier grade is defined by individual projects. And I have been in some of the other calls, and they are already debating that which level of maturity they can deliver for the R2 time frame. The recommendations, again, based on improving APIs, and one of the key points is to harmonize the documentation. In R1, that wasn't really focused and centralized. And in R2, we are hoping that the PTLs, they can use a common unified way of documenting this. And we are recommending that they should be using Swagger. So if that happens, then there will be a consistent way of reflecting all the features, functionality, interaction of between component and projects, and that would really help to for the people to really follow on with future releases of how to really add more material and more functionality to the respective project. The other key point is that we have been working across the different projects to make sure that interface alignment is already there, and the use of the some of the specification in the industry, for example, the ETSI set of interfaces are already supported and captured in R2 release timeframe. As I said, the microservices aspects of the architecture today in R1, the architecture, the implementation architecture is pretty much legacy, monolithic legacy implementation. And the plan is for R2 and beyond to move to a more microservices-based distributed architecture for scalability and more. The key point for that is all the components, they should be able to register with MSP, and the use of microservices best practices. As you can see, there's a lot of discussion about how to use the common KVS store, the database, and also what platform to use to make sure that this is future-proof. So far, there is a preference to use the console for that, okay? The model-driven aspects, as I mentioned, there is a set of recommendations published by the modeling subcommittee. Excuse me, could you mute? I'm hearing some background noise. Could you mute, please? Okay, thank you. And then, Chris, when we talked, you mentioned that Jason is also putting some lists of recommendations with regard to how we should really bring the right level of platform maturity, specifically focusing on S3P, which is how to really show the metrics that can guarantee that a certain level of performance is met for R2, the security aspect, scalability, and more. That is already captured in a separate list of recommendations. I believe that that is already published by Jason. There is an example like music is used for managing of the ONAP component, and especially the database component. The states are already captured. How to synchronize these states across different component database. The enhancements for the authentication authorization function, how to support the credential management and certificates. That's already, been worked out. Support for image management services to enhance security and virus check and more. Okay. These are, I believe.
Can we ask questions along the way, or do you want us to wait?
Chris, is this right time for asking question or?
You can ask questions. Yeah.
So I see a number of contradictions on this page. if you first, and also some dangerous sort of guidance. So first, the modeling subcommittee is still evolving the models. And so to say that it's something published in December would be dangerous. I'm trying to understand how we would rationalize the use of Etsy interfaces against the model that we have, because the two don't really align. I also would like to understand how we would align the Etsy interfaces with the use of microservices, because the Etsy interfaces, in my opinion, or at least based on what I've read, are more over-the-wire protocol style and RESTful-like. But to really truly be microservice-based, you kind of have to go to a REST model. I'm trying to understand how these things don't conflict with each other.
All right. On the modeling subcommittee, Alex, what is your proposed changes? We should remove that, or we should include that with an update on the date of publication, or what?
I muted myself because, you know, there's a lot of noise coming from my computer for some reason, but probably me talking. I would suggest that, you know, it's still a little bit of a moving target, but we're finalizing. So hopefully you could say February 2017 or something along those lines, and that would be okay.
It's got to be pretty soon if the PTLs are going to adopt this.
Yes, we're all working towards that. Yes.
Okay, February 2018.
My point, Chris, is that, you know, just saying use the model is not really going to give us a lot of benefit, right? Using the model in conjunction with the bus and aligning the APIs to the model and making the APIs model driven and the interactions model driven, that would kind of be the right level of guidance. And to the extent that it's possible, maybe we can do it. But at least people would be thinking about it.
Yeah, well, that's the direction that we're trying to recommend here.
On this slide. But again, like, look at some of the SOL interfaces, simply saying use them and then say make things microservice based. How would you? Etsy is not microservice oriented.
I think you can debate that. You can still build microservices from whatever interface that comes into it. I don't think you need to strictly say it has to be one.
But the whole point is the interaction between cloud native or microservice based environments versus what Etsy is proposing is a little bit different, isn't it?
But remember, this is the Beijing package. This is what we can get in the short term, and we aren't fully microservices based in this release, and we won't get there. What we can do is clean up the interfaces and align to the extent possible with the standards and with the model from the modeling subcommittee, and then we can make progress down the road.
But that would mean that we have to adopt the Etsy information model as part of what we're doing, and we're not, clearly.
But there was agreements that we do follow that in the December face-to-face meeting. Has that diverged?
We're inspired by it, but go look at what's going on. It's not. It's not that. So I'm just telling you the reality versus the fantasy, right? The fantasy is that we're all aligned. The reality is that we've built a model based on IFA, based on Etsy Soul, but it's different. And that's okay because it form follows function. And what we need to be able to do follows the right elements of Etsy.
Alex, we are aware of that.
I would say it just drives cost in the industry. And if that's the case, it will slow adoption. That's what will happen.
So then we need to make a very deliberate and intentional decision somewhere to say that we're going to be Etsy API compliant. And then from that...
And that's what this is doing.
Yes, but saying that, you know, use the model published by the modeling subcommittee at the same time is contradictory.
Hold on, Alex. You are working on defining the so-called information model, like VNFT and MNFT and more. Huh?
Yes.
Correct.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So the use of the It's the specified interfaces. We are using this SOL 0003 as an example, but we know that there is a blanket statement in the architecture diagram that says the R2 implementation is ETSI aligned. Are you arguing against that or no? It's ETSI aligned. It's not even ETSI compliant. That argument is already behind us.
I'm simply talking about this page and the fact that we need more precision here. If you want to follow it, then you need to be a lot more precise about what you mean.
Okay. I already changed the publication date. You want to use the example SOL 003. What kind of changes you want to propose or you want to wait after the call?
We probably should wait after the call, but you know, I'd like to make sure that Stephen is involved as well. I can see his perspective. It would be the easiest thing in the world to declare that we need to have one model that is based on some standard. But it won't work with ONAP because that standard just happens to be leveraging an architecture which is 10 years out of date. So we need to decide, are we going to be future-proof or are we going to be compliant with something that's today-proof?
I will also say that compliant means it doesn't mean we can't evolve it, Simano. I will make
And so one of the things we've been talking about, for example, is trying to do contributions back from the community to ETSI. And that would be a good idea, I think, because it would show that we're actually attempting to use these specs, but they're not quite fitting in. But we need to be, again, very, very intentional here. PTLs have an attention span of one release. And so we need to ask them for very, very concrete things that are not likely to change in the future. To me, that's the important piece. So microservice, I get. Integrating with MSB, I totally get. Model-driven, I think we need to be more explicit about what we mean with respect to the microservice bus. And then I would actually hold off on the ETSI piece until release 3, because, you know, we kind of need to really understand what we're asking people to support and whether or not it's a blanket statement or specific interfaces.
So the other way I read this, right, if you read the line align interfaces industry standards available, it's more of a stretch goal. It's not mandating and saying, hey, just do this in this release. That's the way I read it, at least.
Stretch goal or not, it still needs to be precise, right? Because otherwise people are going to go off and do different things.
Sure. That's fair. And also the point being, from what we have seen from the infrastructure side, we can only leverage. I mean, there are a ton of gaps in the ETSI specs to fill. Right. For example, object hierarchies and how we author policies. There are clear gaps in the ETSI spec.
Absolutely. And so before you commit to using something holy and gappy, if there's such a word, right, then, you know, let's think twice, right? And also, you know, by their own admission, the guys who are running a lot of the ETSI spec work will say that, hey, we need to be container proof and we're not. And we need to probably evolve the architecture and we haven't. And so, again, you know, let's not pigeonhole ourselves into something that we'll regret 6 months from now.
Okay, Alex, you want to take it offline or we can quickly rephrase and reword?
Let's take it offline.
Take it offline. Let's not do this here.
From the infrastructure side, multi-cloud side, keep me in the loop, please, on this.
Okay. So,
Before we move on, which I think we should take outline. When we say use microservices best practices, that means a lot of different things to different people.
Exactly.
You have a conversation to nail down what are achievable goals as the architecture progresses, so we should have a conversation about that as well.
As what it means to be microservice or model-driven too, Adolfo, right?
Correct. One is connected to the other if you want to achieve scale.
Yes, exactly.
All right. let me do the following. I set up a call before Thursday. If that's the, Chris, that is your hard deadline, then we have this call to really crash out the, this page, how we can rephrase or reflect what is achievable in R2.
Parvis, that's very important. We have this call not maybe like after 9 or the time when it doesn't overlap with the
well,
core.
Well, maybe, I have to have two calls. Alex, you know that. The U.S.-friendly call doesn't really serve the folks that are dialing from Asia, okay?
Yeah, just so you know, we've been having daily 5 okay. calls on the data model, right? Daily.
I know. I know that you complain about that, but I try to have maybe 2 calls, one for U.S. And maybe Europe, and one for China and India, maybe. Okay?
Let's take this offline. Let's get this resolved soon, excuse me, because we need to get TSC approval by the M2 date, which is coming up in early February, and we need to roll in any changes coming from the TSC from new project approvals by that time. So please take this offline and close on it quickly, come back next week. Okay. Go
All
ahead.
Right, sure. We'll do that. All right, the next section is the functional description of the component, specifically the ones that there is a dependency on the R2 release. And I already had a long discussion. Actually, we in the Tiger team, we had quite a few calls to go over specifically the next few slides. Like here, you can see service design and creation functional architecture. There has been lots of discussion that how we can really put the functionality for SDC and make sure that it would serve the purpose for both R2 and beyond R2. And this contribution has been heavily debated in the Tiger team. And so far, this is where we stand on the functional architecture for SDC. So the detail has been, Chris, already debated and discussed in the architecture team, okay? The Tiger team. So this is for SDC. As you can see on the left, there's a set of a high-level functional area. And then on the right, those functions, how those are captured in the overall SDC internal architecture diagram. The set of the functions that in each block was meticulously discussed in the Tiger team. We had a lot of revision on this page, thanks to the contributor that they really work out probably some of the off hours to make sure that the content here is stable and ready for sharing with the TSC, okay? For sharing with the TSC.
But this now is going to change, right? I mean, as soon as we start putting in all the stuff for R2, it's likely to change. So do you want us, is the intent of this slide deck to maintain the definitive view of what each functional block looks like?
That's where we are.
So, This is where we stand now. Okay, Alex, we go and look into the other aspect you mentioned, and if that would reflect differently on this page, so be it. We make necessary update. Okay. Okay. The next one is catalog architecture. Again, this was heavily debated in the Tiger team. And this is where we stand. The design catalog, which includes the items that are already listed here, and the picture on the right, which captures the detail that how the function is envisioned to be implemented in R2 and beyond R2. So the catalog architecture was, again, debated heavily. And this is where we stand now, okay? The next one is the orchestration layer, the orchestrator function. I personally, I'm very happy that we had this discussion. We came up with a very modular architecture for orchestration layer. we identified different sublayers like service level and resource level, the interaction between the two, and the interaction of each of those sublayers with the API handler, the interaction between the component, all the interfaces that are externally exposed, is so-called the orchestration external interactions, OE. There are labels that reflect how those reflect the external interactions happens between orchestration subcomponent and also between orchestration and other ONAP components. Okay, there are two sets of interfaces. One is internal for orchestrator. One is external. OE, a set of interfaces are external exposure, and OI interfaces are internal interaction between the subcomponents. Okay, we are actually working on the detailed specification of OE and OI set of interfaces. The main key point here is the notion of the complex services, simple services, services that require the more further recursive interaction between the service level and resource level is already captured in this framework, okay? So this was agreed by the Tiger team at the last meeting. And Chris, we had a follow-on discussion on this, that this is the bigger picture. This is where we are going to leverage on the existing interfaces that was mentioned in the previous slide, that how to use, for example, the interfaces that is already happening as part of the external API project, more specifically to bring the MEF set of specification, Interlude, Legato, and more into the OE set of interfaces, and how we can also leverage the Etsy interfaces, Soul, and other interfaces that are currently being implemented as part of the R2. It's pretty much the code is available for R1, but the PTLs are making necessary changes to make it ready for R2. Okay, so those set of interfaces could be reflected on all individual lines that are labeled here. For example, OE11, there is a clear indication that that would be a part of the external API. And there are internal APIs that are currently being already implemented. And we need to really have a matrix in the exact detail implementation that which interface is going to use which industry standards. And that matrix is currently work in progress, okay? The next one is the SDN controller. Again, as a design point for the architecture is to separate the controller function from the orchestration function. And this is an attempt to do that. For the SDN controller, we are moving into the direction that we can implement a set of the building sub-modules, sub-components within the SDN controller to make sure that we can use it based on the scope of the project with SDNC in on R2 time frame, okay? Those components we already debated in the architecture team, and I have already talked to the SDNC project. And I guess we are in alignment based on what is the PTL is envisioning for the R2 roadmap. Okay. The next one is the data collection, analytic and events. Again, the discussion is happened in the Tiger team. This is the overall internal structure of the DCAE and the interaction with the other component. The list of functions that you can see on this slide, this was again debated in the architecture team, and the way that we are envisioning for R2, that how the DCAE is going to be implemented is should be pretty much consistent with the view on this picture. There are certain, yeah.
Purvis, this is Raghu. In a previous slide, this is more a process probably. In a previous slide, you had, not this one, but some other slide where you had said, this is partially implemented and this is yet to be implemented. But in these additional slides, I don't see that kind of distinction. Was the discussion in the Tiger team to also make that additional information capture? Maybe if you go maybe four slides before, like slide 9 or 10, I think there.
But Raghu, there are not significant changes in DCAE for Beijing release, whereas in catalog we are putting runtime catalog, which wasn't there, so that's correct. Why there was a decision. But the DCAE, it's somewhat evolution and mostly S3 focus enhancement, not major changes like STC we are doing.
Cool. Sorry, Alex, just to complete.
Go ahead, I'm sorry, Raghu.
Yeah, just to complete my response to Vimal. And Purvis, if there are no tweaks, the default assumption that when we look at these slides, if we don't see that explicit call out, then the default assumption is that there is no incremental change. Okay.
No significant change.
Okay.
Yeah. The evolution is happening everywhere, but no significant change in the architecture, yes.
Okay. Sorry, Alex.
No, my fault. On the previous slide, we have references to different external and internal interfaces. Are these also meant to be model driven and microservice based or centric? And if so, is this an intent or is this the actual assertion that we have them already?
Okay, Alex, as I mentioned, this interaction that is shown on this picture was agreed by the Tiger team, and the team of whatever we are doing in the architecture work is three things. It has to be model driven, it has to be modular, it has to be microservices based, and it has to be a clear separation between orchestration and controller layer. So we already laid out, those are the foundation for defining the set of interfaces here. Okay.
So do we have we've actually made sure that the information model and the models that we have actually captured the objects that these interfaces operate on?
Absolutely. Even I had the offline discussion with the PTL, I was really happy to see that the PTL, they see this pretty much matching their expectation, even for R2. I specifically asked them if there is anything that needs to be added or anything that doesn't really match whatever they plan to implement for R2. Of course, for R2 implementation, the focus is platform maturity, as Chris already mentioned.
Yeah.
But they are happy with this. Actually, I already checked with the PTLs, okay?
So the bus. So
I'll give one more example. As we progress into R2, of course, given the parities of the platform maturity, what we're saying is transitioning to model driven. Specifically, an example we're saying is an SO to multi cloud. It's still going to be some sort of heat based for certain clouds, like OpenStack based, and also possibly we're introducing Azure, but that is going to be Tosca based. So is the intention of this deck to capture these details as we progress, or how are we going to align? This is just an R2 statement, right?
Okay, I give you the answer from, this is a vision, a recommendation that Chris is going to present to TSC, a guideline, a set of guidelines that would really help the PTRs to work on and their individual projects for R2. The guidelines should really help for them to do whatever needed to make sure that R2 release is carrier grade, is mature, is model driven, is modular, and it would use the microservices as a fundamental design point for their implementation. Okay, Ramki, so far I haven't seen any.
Hello?
Parviz, did we lose you?
Yeah, Chris, I feel like what Adolfo said before needs to be kind of vetted first, and then I think what we'll find is the picture is not necessarily as cheerful as we make it out to be. So we need to. I understand that we need to give some guidance for release two, and we should. But what I would suggest is that one of the pieces of guidance is that we start thinking about functional decomposition of these big blocks and maybe some faceting and refactoring, right? And kind of starting to cast the APIs and to be more as operations on managed objects and more functional in nature.
Right. Yeah. So for instance, Alex, the so I guess if Parviz, if you can go quickly back to the orchestration slide 11. The one of the loops.
I don't know if Parviz 11. Can hear us.
We might have lost Parviz.
Oh,
let me send him a text.
Okay. Well, on slide 11, there was a service level and resource level flows called out with APIs between them. The reason I did that, Alex, is because based upon analysis, it seems that regarding your Etsy comment, that the resource level functionality that is currently built into ONAP today, that those flows aligns to some of the Etsy functions. For that a VNFM would perform. Others would be down in the controller. So there's sort of like a split. And so the hope is that by defining those APIs, at least giving them a label on a PowerPoint and have a way to reference them, we could maybe align functionally the interactions between what may become microservices one day, evolve into microservice in such a way that, you know, you could achieve Steven Terrell's goal of being able to plug in something that's legacy Etsy or whatever.
But if you go back to, I don't know if Parviz can, who's scrolling the slides?
Parviz has the slides.
Okay. So Gil, in a previous slide, I thought I saw on the right-hand side model database being ingested via the microservice bus. And the question that I have is, would we not allow the SDNC and AppC to get the necessary resource models from that I need to look back at the diagram. I might be speaking something. Rather than having the SO decompose all the way down to the granularity of the function and then ask AppC to just be a slave for, hey, trigger these functions.
Well, there are lots of ways to do it though, right?
And
I guess my point is that I think what Gil has done is actually, that makes sense, right? You split things into functional boundaries and you expose those as little functional blocks, right? That you can write, you know, microservice interfaces against or whatnot. But we have a lot of components that are much more monolithic, and simply plugging them into the microservice bus as they are today is not going to be of much value. Refactoring them into almost like, you know, smaller functions and understanding which need to scale and which don't and which have data and which don't, and applying different patterns for, you know, data exchange, that would be useful exercise. And that needs to be done, right?
And this goes probably to your model-driven point.
Exactly.
Right? And I think one of the challenges that we are going to see is, ideally, we would want the SO to look at a component of the service that is abstracted by the SDNC or the AppC
at the
component of the domain rather than at the component of an individual function.
Well, ideally, you know, there was a picture published by Oasis a long time ago with respect to, you know, orchestration and whatnot, where they had the model for the orchestration, the template in the middle, surrounded by a tool chain that, you know, was able to have a common representation of a model to work against, a shared common representation of a model to work against. And they were able to do instantiation, operation, remediation, assurance, you know, all the typical things that you would do, right? And I think we're well on the way to do that, maybe within Gil's domain, but I wish other components would kind of use that that approach as well, right? And so again, you know, what can we do in R2 to move the needle, you know, towards this kind of decoupling and decomposition of what we have? Right.
Yeah, and this is Gil's old slide, I think, which is very nice.
Yeah.
And the only constant confusion in my mind is if I look at that first block called Service X, it's composed of different node templates. I would have expected those node templates to be some service component templates, and the nested Purvis is doing something. The nested pieces there in the resource orchestration, it would break out that instead of calling it a VNF, it would call, say, a firewall service, and then the firewall service will break it to its perfect specific.
Well, the cool thing about
The other thing that occurs to me as we are going through, I mean, discussions in deeply, especially in multi-cloud and also OAuth projects, is that sort of the prioritizing S3P seems to be, I mean, slightly in conflict with the model driven, because the reason
I said that before. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it's
so,
the...
I mean, I'm just saying, if you're really serious, you have to probably put an equal priority on both of them, because right now the approach seems to be, hey, you know, let's just do S3P, and then, you know, basically it's basically taking the existing code and literally just stabilizing it, you know, doing performance testing on it or whatever is needed, right?
Ramki, refactoring what we have maybe and changing, you know, changing the granularity of the functions might take us a long way towards S3P.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm saying what I'm also seeing is, then are we doing S3P on the wrong, I mean, on the not the right framework, right?
Yeah, we have no choice, right? You know,
we got to do with what we have now and make some improvements in a very short period of time. You know, that's really coming as the priority for this release, and it is reducing the amount of cycles that we have for refactoring. But you know, part of it, you know, we have two challenges as the architecture team. Part of it is giving a forward-looking vision so that the projects have something to adapt to, especially in their planning cycles for future releases. But part of it is also near-term and being able to reflect what we're going to get in the coming release. So we want to lead the team. And we want to put out the long-term vision about where we're going with model-driven, microservices-based, but give them concrete steps that they can use in the short time period and then balanced against all the other priorities for them so that we get something achievable.
So if we evaluate our current effort, and if you look at what the APC or the VF, whatever the controller name is, folks are doing, and they are creating a model, what is their northbound interface into the SO at this point in time? What is their API looking like? And if we now look at the SO diagram that Gil has and say there is a resource template, is that matching up, or is this now?
Eventually, right? But not yet.
Especially on the APC side, that's it's not perfectly aligned. When you talk about VFC, that's coming in with one of the Etsy Sol 05 interfaces. So we're trying to take what we have, which is a large collection of different APIs, and then normalize them on something better and cleaner longer term.
Chris, if you really want to make things sticky, and I suggested this to Parviz, and unfortunately, the challenge with the Tiger Team meetings is that they happen at weird times, that it may be too early for consistent kind of attendance. So I stopped. I can't, you know, I need my beauty rest. I'm sorry. But I've said this before. I think what's important is to take a user-centric approach and to start looking at things in terms of workflows of tasks. And once you start, you know, identifying common steps, those instantly become utilities or microservices in their own right. But as you define, you know, steps and tasks through workflows having to do with instantiation or fulfillment or assurance or billing or whatever, then you kind of start looking at things from a different perspective and saying, hey, I need a function that does X, and it's going to be used by multiple workflows that are aligned with some business process. And if you can get to that point and refactor the code or facade the code with those types of interfaces, then life is good.
Yeah.
Hello.
But the approach that you're putting out, you know, it sounds good, but it's already past M1 for the Beijing release, which means that it's not part of people's plan of record. And they're not going to have cycles to make a whole lot of changes. I would suggest that's something that we need to do towards the Casablanca release.
Yes.
It's definitely a useful thing so that when we get the Casablanca package, we can have some concrete steps along those lines.
But it goes towards what, you know, Gil was saying, right? Oh, yeah. I have a step to service, to decompose a service. I have a step to orchestrate a service. Oh, right. That decomposes down into resource orchestration tasks. These are the kinds of things we need to do across all the components.
Right. So now that we have everything on the table, we hear you now. So now that we have everything on the table, we need to finalize our package for Beijing, which is really documenting what we have, plus a slight stretch goal to improve it. But then we can start thinking, as we plan for Casablanca, how do we go in a more microservices and more modular direction?
Well, and if we're also serious about doing these modeling exercises or using Etsy specs or other kinds of specs, right?
Right.
I think there needs to be a really strong mapping to our information model, right? Mm-hmm. We have to use the same names, use the same attributes as much as we can. You know, we can't be just... you've got to be the same, but then there's nothing in common there.
Right. Yeah, I agree. We need to work on this. We've got this view that Parviz presented this time is just the Beijing view. I know the Tiger team has been working on steps towards Casablanca, and that's been removed from this particular deck because we need to get this finalized and up to the TSC. But, those are all good steps as we plan for the future.
Yeah.
Okay.
Gil, I have a question about what you said before, that you've incorporated an interface between functions according to the perhaps to the Etsy functional breakdown, but in ONAP many of these things are actually happening within SO, right? So are we expecting to implement these APIs within SO? Is this the idea?
I don't know if Sesshu's on the bridge right now, but
no, I asked Gil.
Yeah. So that's the idea that gives. So the idea is to label the interfaces so that we could do that. Yes. You're asking, Yoav, would we really be formalizing the interface between a service level flow and a resource level flow for orchestration?
Yeah.
And perhaps formalize it such that the API actually is somewhat aligns to a standard, an industry standard like a Netsy. And the answer is yes. Yes, that would be the
idea. So even within SO, even though both of them are actually done within SO, they would happen using these interfaces.
Yeah. So for example, one way you could do this, right? One way that I've talked, at least on AT&T, I've talked internally with John Coma. One way you could do this is you could this could help the let's say in Susanna's proposal that you have a different SO instances, one that is doing service level stuff, one that's doing resource level stuff, right? So you could you could wrap the internal API from the service level. You could have the service level flow direct its OI6 request to a local proxy that sits on the instance of SO that it it's working on. Then you could have that local proxy wrap that OI6 into some other external external to SO API call. Like maybe an OI, what would it be? Probably a, I'm not quite sure. Maybe I'm missing an OE here. And then have an adapter on the other instance that would unwrap that and forward the OI6 to the SO that's doing the resource level.
Mm-hmm.
So you could do stuff like that. So it's sort of like a microservices approach, right? The different functions shouldn't care where these things are running. And so therefore, what that also implies is that if it turns out that OI6 looks sort of like, in some ways, the northbound side of a VNF manager, then you could have a service level flow talk to a VNF manager and think it's talking to a resource level orchestration flow. Yeah. If the VNF manager had an adapter on its side that would talk to OI6.
Yeah, anyway. Sorry, this is Aviz. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I lost my phone, the audio, but now computer. If you can hear me. Yeah, good. This is already explained in detail in a separate slide. So the interaction between the service level and the resource level has to do with this complex service scenario and the nested services that I mentioned. There is a separate slide on this. Now, okay. I don't know what exactly was the question.
Well, the question is very simple. What is the value of using a standard? I mean, if you're going to expose the service level function externally for consumption on the bus, let me put it this way. If you expose the service level function for the consumption on the bus, separate from the resource level function, then there may be some value in creating a connector or an adapter that speaks Etsy SOL 1, 5, 6, whatever it is, right?
There's however, definitely value, yeah.
However, if you if all you're doing is conflating these two components and they're internal to something that is exposed, then who cares? Mm-hmm. I would expect those interfaces to not even be RESTful, to be honest, because the RESTful interfaces are slow. Internal interfaces can be much faster if we use other approaches.
Right. And so for the OI, so the OI6, well, I'm not quite sure how the plumbing would work, but hopefully we could find a way that if the service level and resource level are on the same instance of SO or the same instance of whatever, execute in the same place, then OI6 is an internal API that is optimized for internal use. But if they're directed on other instances, then the OI6 is directed to a proxy, which talks the slower the slower external API.
I guess, Gil, the way I would look at it, now that I see the microservice bus in green, if the interface transcends the bus, or if it goes on the bus, then there's value in standards. If it's just inside the blue box, who cares, right? But again, it just it's this is why we need to maybe weave the microservice bus story in here a little more carefully.
Would we, Alex, want the internal? Would you really want an OI6 to go through the microservices bus for internal flow-to-flow communication, or?
No, if it's internal, then no. But if it's not internal, then.
Well, so one way of looking at it is that we deploy, you know, one or more microservices in the system for service level orchestration as needed to keep up with scaling, and the same thing for resource level. And those may be deployed in a hierarchical manner, meaning that, you know, one delegates to the other, but they're always on the bus, separate entities, in which case having standardized APIs might be useful. But if they're buried inside some orchestration execution, internal components, then it's not.
Maybe we can make it a configurable thing.
Yes, exactly. It'd be so, configurable. Yeah, so that's the proposal. So yeah, I see it's OE4. So if service level and resource level are on two different instances, then OI6 would be wrapped into OE4.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. There is a question, guys. Chris, as you can see, there's a question. If this is planned for Beijing, it's aligned with the individual project, Beijing planning. Again, the RP implementation is captured in the other section of this deck based on the input and confirmation from the PTL. Okay. So, I hope that I answered Ling Li's question. But this picture is to make sure, I already checked with some of the PTL, that the picture would reflect the interaction, whether it's internal. Alex, you're saying if it's internal, we don't care. But this interaction is already happening between the components, okay? How we are gonna implement it, that is right now, is that
so? So bad example on my part, because you know what Gil is doing would clearly be self-contained orchestration instances that might be doing different things. But take something else that's purely internal, right? We would never make that. We would always use the fastest possible interfaces inside the microservice itself.
Okay.
Yep.
So Chris, sorry about the audio problem. Do we have more time to entertain more questions or what?
We have a couple of minutes. I want to make sure that we reserve time for the OOM team to finish up. I can give you till 10 after.
Yeah, let me summarize on what I heard from Mr. Liu here.
So for this, a follow-up question on this, just to understand the scope, and I think it is similar to Ling Li's question. So we saw this figure, and we saw this potential interface between service level and resource level. Is any of this going to be translated to requirements made to SO for Beijing?
No.
If so, by whom? And how are we planning to promote this and push this forward with the project?
The detailed implementation of all those internal and external interfaces, that is a work in progress, but the direction for the architecture vision is there. How much of this is going to be implemented in R2? That is already clarified as the input from the PTL. The section that talks about the R2 functional description is already cleared by the PTL. The architecture direction that you see on the picture, this is the discussion already happened in the Tiger Sea, and we are going to have more calls in the details into what set of functionality is going to be implemented by each interface. And that is work in progress, okay? So it's not going to really be something put a new requirement for the PTL to implement like OEX or IOX. That already captured in the individual project set of function that is already into this package, and it could be consumed by the R2 release, okay?
But the part is, the unfortunate situation is that the way the PTLs are planning the release to work, and believe me, I'm pretty close to that because of all the stuff that I'm driving, they're already stretched. Yeah. So they're looking at Jira stories and planning the resourcing, right? If this is not a Jira story somewhere, nothing is going to get done.
You're not asking PTL to do more. They already, we have their input.
Okay.
Parvi has already talked to the PTLs. We know what they're going to do in the next few months.
Yeah.
This is the architecture that they're heading towards.
I think so. Maybe the confusion is, we presented that SO slide that had an internal API defined, at least it was called, it was labeled OI6 between service level and resource level.
Yeah.
That's just a label on a PowerPoint at this point. There is no definition behind that. Now, Parviz showed in his slide that we want to start aligning our interfaces with standards like Etsy. Now, don't take those two statements and say that, you know, therefore in release two, aligning means that we're actually going to build something. I think what it means, so the start aligning in release two, I think means start the analysis of how we can start getting our internal APIs such that we could do plug in stuff like VNFMs, et cetera. It's an analysis thing right now, I think.
We are actually expecting more contribution detailed description of those interfaces, so we can then map into the existing R2 implementation. But the R2 implementation is already cast in concrete. That's input from the PTL assistant.
Would it be fair to say then, to avoid any confusion, this is really a architectural recommendation?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I think if you make that statement, then I think there's no confusion at all.
Yeah, I think we need to work on making this actionable, guys, right? I mean, if we're going to – these are good ideas, right? Nobody's debating that. We need to maybe align on the details of what we mean by different terminology and what, you know, the real objectives are in terms of scalability and whatnot. But in order to make it real, it's got to make its way into Jira.
Okay. For the last 2 minutes, folks, please give me until the 10 after 8. We're going to have the call to discuss the points that raised by Alex, Rago, and others. Thanks, Ramki, we are going to label this architecture slide that is recommendations, that the actual implementation and commitment for R2 is reflected in the set of functional description that is already captured in the deck. Right? So you have it for the PTL.
Okay. Anything else on this topic?
No.
Okay.
I just quickly asked a question on the chat. I was browsing Gil's Presso 2018-01-15, and it was a slide on an instantiate example. Would be great to include if whatever final slide deck that we are coming up with. For at least the SO, I see this diagram, and it'll be great if we can include something like that. And maybe this is what Alex was alluding to as the workflow.
Okay. Is this Rago?
Yes.
We are not done with that. I even asked for detailed description, functional description of all those lines that are labeled. We're waiting for more contribution. But the architecture diagram, I did a sanity check with the relevant PTLs. We are not off. You can check for yourself. We are not off. The architecture is indeed maps into what is going to happen even in our
case. Hold on one second. Hey, Lingli, could you please mute? Go ahead, Parviz.
Okay, Raghu, the R2 implementation is cast in concrete based on the input from PTL. Alex had a good point. There is no new resources that we are going to push the individual project to do more. That is at their discretion. And the input from them constitutes the mandate for R2 based on the input from PTL. This architecture, as Ramki said, we are going to label that as a recommendation, not requirement, okay?
Okay. Yes, understood. Yeah, thanks.
So let's take this offline now. Parviz is going to have a follow-up on this, and we'll try to finalize next week, including any new projects that come from the TSC. I'd like to invite the OOM team pick up. They were going to do a demo last time, so I'd like to hand the call over to OOM.
Great. Thanks, Chris.
Sure.
Just share my screen. So maybe since it's been a couple weeks since I did the presentation half, I might just quickly go over a couple slides, just put the demo into context again. What we're trying to achieve here is we want to share with the community what we've done in OOM so far towards kind of standardizing some consistent config management for the platform. Current state is we definitely have some inconsistencies. All the applications have been developed independently, or at least most of them, and don't really share the same config mechanisms. There's a lot of external configuration in files and environment variables, and some stored directly into various persistent storage technologies. And there's a lot of internal configuration for the application. So when we start up the containers, they may run Chef scripts or whatever to configure their containers internally, and not necessarily a bad thing, but we could all benefit in the community if we had some type of a shared mechanism to do that. Now, what we're looking to do is support multiple customized deployment environments, much like we have today with the heat environment files, so that we can size the ONAP deployments, picking and choosing our applications that we want to deploy based on, pre-production, integration, prod, and development type environments. And we want to be able to override configurations that have been defaulted in the applications. For instance, we have a big problem right now. We just want to point all of the ONAP applications to a single internal repository, so we're not going out over the internet to the Nexus 3 server. We should be able to do that very easily with an override environment file. Also, I'd like to share configuration across the applications so that if we define OpenStack configuration, that can be shared as needed between the applications, or simple host names, credentials, things of that sort. And configuring it once is a bit of a task right now, but managing multiple configurations and applying different configuration versions once the system is running is something we haven't really thought of or put too much thought into right now. So We need to be able to version control this, and the ability to roll back to previously working configurations on a running system. And there is a distinction between having static configuration that can be applied in a non-disruptive manner to deployed applications, and also there might be a need to have dynamic configuration that we can directly apply to the running applications without having to restart any of the replicas that may be running. There is support, or needs to be support rather, for pre and post processing hooks so that we can do things like managing upgrades of databases and things like that, evolving schemas and data sets as part of an upgrade procedure and or a downgrade. And managing sensitive data is something we lack now. I understand there are projects in play right now to store password secrets, certificates. I think Vault is being recommended for that. And on the dev level, it would be really great that once we have these customized environments and global overrides, that we could apply a debug to one or all applications as part of a deployment to help ease determining the cause of issues while the system's running. And the demo is going to focus on use of Helm. It is already used today in an OOM, just under the hood. There are some wrapper scripts that are used to set up various environment and prerequisite items in Kubernetes, but we want it to be as simple as just using Helm directly to install all of ONAP or individual applications, to upgrade them and roll them back.
Can I ask a quick question on the previous slide?
Sure.
So I was thinking the dynamic configuration would not be a common pattern, right? It'll be more of the static with non-descriptive rolling upgrade. That'll be the desired method, right? Of managing.
It depends on really performance needs, right? How quickly do you want to apply a configuration and have it react in the system? Upgrades take time, right?
Maybe more of an additional clarification there. But dynamic, are we saying it's still going through the CI/CD system, or it's like you're just injecting some configuration on the fly and then later going through the whole CI/CD process? What does that entail?
So this is for a running system, not so much the CI/CD environment that you would do during development. So consumer of ONAP was going to have a running system and apply configuration on a regular basis. And if applying a static config, which involves rolling upgrade of large clusters, that takes time or can take time. So it's just the thinking that goes along with when I apply this configuration, how quickly and how non-disruptive do I want it to be?
But will the dynamic also go through then, the dynamic is also version controlled, or maybe I think I'm trying to phrase the question even better. Is the dynamic going through version control eventually, or you're just going to directly apply that configuration before version control? So that's
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that goes to the type of configuration it would be. Maybe this is a debug thing. Enabling verbose output, not something that is persisted but is temporary.
Okay.
Hi, Elliot. This is Parviz. Just a clarification question. Roger sent me the functional description for R2 implementation for OOM. What you're demoing, the set of features, these are consistent with the R2 deliverables, or it's above R2, beyond R2?
R2 being Beijing, this is this is why we wanted to demonstrate this to the art community first, is to start to get buy-in. I think there's some decisions that have to be made on how we can roll this out, or if this makes sense to start standardizing in Beijing. Definitely when we start getting into providing HA and those other capabilities, there's a big benefit to having consistent management mechanism so that you can apply scaling and things of that nature. So I'll, at the end of this demo, I'll bring up what kind of what we're trying to achieve here in terms of buy-in for the Beijing release.
Good. Okay, thanks.
Okay. So here I'm just showing the OOM code base as it's checked out today. And I don't know if everyone's seen this, but we have directories under the Kubernetes directory that is a one per application in ONAP. So we have AppC and ANAI, and all of the applications are represented here. And I'll start by demonstrating or kind of interrogating MSO here. Each directory contains information, deployment descriptors on how to deploy that application and how to configure it. This is done through application descriptors, or these are config shown in YAML here. It's a descriptor that looks, if you've seen the Docker files, Docker Compose, it's very similar. It has a lot of the same information. It describes what containers to run, what images will be used, what environment variables will be passed in, commands for startup, and volumes that will be mounted into the containers. Okay, and with that is some default configuration values in the form of a values YAML file. Here, all of these config values that you put here are defaults that could be overridden at a higher level. In this case, MSO, we're referencing some OpenStack configuration. We have a debug flag here, which is set to false. And these things can be referenced from within these deployment descriptors. So if we look at the image, you can see that if we look at the values repository OOM and the image MSO, we can relate those back to values that are in the repository ONAP and the image MSO values in this file. Okay, this is part of the repository section here is part of the override that I was saying we would like to do so that we don't end up reaching out to external repositories, but repoint these to a single internal repo. Now, in the deployment descriptors, we have config maps, which is a mechanism that Kubernetes and Helm use to bind configuration inside a Kubernetes cluster. So here we can see that we look through a config directory in MSO, and we're going to load up the config and map them into the Kubernetes environment. This config directory is contained within the MSO directory. So here's all the external configuration files that are needed right now to start up MSO. If we look at config MSO files, including the AI certificate, are going to be loaded into the Kubernetes environment and accessible and mounted within the deployment descriptor here. So here's an example of referencing a config map that was loaded up. Here's some other for logbacks. So there's quite a few of config maps that are loaded up for MSO today. Now this poses a problem because we have a duplication of config today. So OM has cloned and owned the configuration for the purpose of supporting substitution. Okay, so the same config key value pairs that are in values YAML can be also referenced in any of the configuration provided it's self-contained in this Helm package. That's what this directory represents, is the packaging up of the MSO application for deployment using Helm. Okay, so that's something that needs to be discussed. We need to figure out, we only want one version of the config, and it's either going to live here or it needs to live with the application teams. Makes sense that the app teams directly own that, but in order to do that, we're probably going to have to change where that config is stored in the app repos today. Much as we have a docs directory in every repo in ONAP today, and a job goes through and pulls out all the documentation, assembles them, and deploys it, we could do something similar with config for every application. That way, we can create a job where OM can go out, pull the config that's owned by the app teams, and assemble these Helm packages for deployment.
Question, in this context, what do you mean by substitution?
So here we have a lot of config values that we need to replace in the config files themselves, the external config files. So here's an MSO Docker JSON file. This is the primary config file for MSO. And we can't hard code OpenStack configuration. There's various other aspects of config that we want to substitute in here as well. Let me just find another example here. OpenStack, we got region IDs, all of this stuff we can externalize now into a values YAML file. Okay, these are default values, but what we'd want and what I'm going to demonstrate is how you can override these at a higher level according to the environment that you're deploying.
Okay, so that's for the purpose of abstracting the environment in a way?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, okay. Thanks.
I'm curious, do we have any secrets which you're managing today, and are we considering moving those also into the Kubernetes?
That's an option, but I think there is another project that is working on how do we store certificates and secrets, and that's using HashiCorp's Vault.
Okay. Yes, that's going to be part of AAF.
Yeah. So,
just curious, would that be leveraging the Kubernetes framework?
I don't think that is. Kubernetes does have some capabilities for storing secrets as well, and certificate management. But I think the direction that the community is going right now is to use Vault. So that doesn't use Kubernetes. It's almost a competitor, you know, in a way. I'm not also sure that all of the capabilities of Vault, it might exceed those of Kubernetes, in fact. I'm not sure.
So OM then interface with Vault? Is that the plan?
The applications would interface with AAF, I assume, to pull out certificates and that.
But if there's anything system level, what I meant, sorry. Like, yeah, one is application, but is there anything system level there? It can be stored in Kubernetes or?
So if there's a need for OM to interact with AAF to get certificates and such, then we would do that. Yeah. Okay. I'm not sure what the plan is right now for this. Like, this is the external config that's in MSO today. The application teams, I think, are going to have to take a look at how their microservices are being configured today. And I think that will change somewhat in the Beijing timeframe, right? It doesn't have to be externalized here. In fact, reducing the amount of external configuration, it could be limited to environment variables itself, right? And then we don't have a lot of this external config. So there's a bunch of different mechanisms that we could make use of here that doesn't require us to dump a lot of config here. Did I answer your question or did I confuse things?
Mike, are there other, you know, the various components, are they, do they have a consistent way of doing this config, or is it that each MSO does it this way and then other components do a different way?
So that's what we're driving towards, is to gain consistency in terms of what external configuration we expose and the mechanisms that we use. So we have these default values that can be overridden, and I'll show that in a minute. We have config maps for loading up external configuration if the apps require that. And we have environment variables that are passed in the deployment descriptors. The other mechanism is persistent volume mounts. So the actual external databases and mounted data. So with all of those mechanisms, we can decide what best suits an application's needs. But we are trying to standardize, at least in terms of what config is externalized and the mechanisms to override values. Okay. So just to show, this is the default values, as I have indicated. There is a debug flag that's set here, that when set to true enables debugging throughout MSO. This gets passed along, and put into this MSO Docker file, if I can find it here. Oh, sorry, that's not where it is. It's in the MSO deployment. We have this environment variable that's passed in, and it's referencing that debug flag. I'm showing you this because this is what I'm going to walk through now, is being able to override that. So all those directories that I showed you in Kubernetes get zipped up into Helm packages that are hosted by a web server for remote access, just like we do today with a Nexus, and we have Docker repos and Maven repos. If I do a Helm repo list, so now I'm using Helm directly and not the one-click scripts that are part of OOM today, we can see that I've set up a single local repo here, I'm calling it ONAP, and what would be contained in here is all the artifacts as they build. Just like the Docker images, we would build the Helm packages and deploy them to a Helm repo. In here, I've shown just two different versions of MSO, but the idea is you would have a top level ONAP chart. These are called charts that are version controlled, so you can deploy all of ONAP or the individual applications. So you would see every application represented here, multiple versions. Okay. Doing a Helm list tells us we have no applications currently deployed in Kubernetes. And if I take a look at my cluster, we see that there's no ONAP related applications running right now. In fact, no MSO. So to install or deploy this application, we do a Helm install. I'm going to use ONAP MSO as the name of the application. And if I just execute this, if I spelt install right, then this would pick the latest version. So it would pick the 1.1.2, which is not what I'm interested in deploying at the moment. I'm going to specify a version. 1.10. And just as a convenience, I'm going to name this with a user-friendly name instead of Kubernetes will tend to hash this and give you a somewhat cryptic name. So now I am deploying MSO. We see as part of that package, it includes a MariaDB and the MSO application, the JBoss application server. Okay. I can do a Helm list, and I now see that its status is currently being deployed. Okay. It's revision one. It's the first time we've ever installed this. Some of the information that got spit out here on the screen included all of the configuration maps that make up that application. So you can see there's config related to Comunda and schemas, database config, and all of that. So working with the app teams, we might find a way to reduce the amount of external config that we need to load up in config maps, but it doesn't really matter. We just get a large number of config maps. So if I look now, I have both applications running. And what I would like to do is I want to update the configuration of that running application. But first, I'm going to show you. I'm just going to take a quick look at what the current state of the configuration is in MSO. It's going to dump out a lot of config information. What I want to look for is the debug flag. It indicated the JBoss debug flag is set to false because that was the default value for that flag. And that's been applied when we deployed this application. I'm going to now do a Helm upgrade to that named application, which happens to be version 1 today. And I'm going to apply an environment file, which I've set up here. We have a number of environment files just for demo purposes. You can see we have a dev environment, a pre-prod, and production. We look at this. This is where you would define all of the applications that you want to deploy as part of your customized deployment environment. I've commented that out right now, and I'm only going to deploy MSO. I don't have to override all of these. I only need to provide overrides for the config that I want to override. In this case, it's the enable debug, but I just wanted to show you can actually apply overrides to anything that's been defaulted. So here I'm going to apply this demo YAML. What's going to happen is the applications are going to be restarted. In this case, it's a single instance of MSO and MariaDB, but once we have high availability, what happens for free is Kubernetes is going to perform a non-disruptive rolling upgrade. So there is a communications layer, a services layer, where all applications are talking to MSO. Those are the only ports that we've externalized. And what happens below that in an HA situation is Kubernetes is going to take one MSO down, reconfigure it, and bring it up. Traffic's going to be routed to the MSOs that are currently not being upgraded. And then once the upgrade's complete, traffic starts routing to the upgraded MSOs. So the clients of the application are unaware of this actual upgrade that's being applied.
And also wanted to add in that context of, you know, the up and coming technology like service mesh make the process even smoother, right? I mean, the upgrade process.
The service mesh?
Yeah.
Right. Yes. So now if we take a look, the only config change that was really applied is the debug flag. So we've now enabled debugging. Now we can still see that have one MSO deployed. That's the version number of the chart, but we're on revision 2. And if I do another install, but this time I'm going to move to the latest and greatest version. Oops. Oops, sorry. So I'm going to upgrade MSO to the latest and greatest version. So what I've done is I've upgraded the binary to a newer version, but I'm relying on the default configuration. What I could have done is also provide an environment file so that I can override the defaults. In this particular case, the application that I'm starting, the 112, actually I've injected an error into this. It can't pull the image, so we see that it is broken. If I do a Helm history on MSO, I can see how we have different revisions, that this one is currently the deployed version, and they supersede previous revisions. And this allows you to do rollbacks to known states they were successfully deployed. So I'm going to roll back to revision 2 for MSO. And we see that the history. We can see that the currently deployed version, we've rolled back to version 2, to a known state. There's actually a way to override the description so that it can give you, you can apply what was actually changed when you applied that version. So you can keep track and see, have some tracking ID or description so you can very quickly see what versions are deployed and what versions you can bounce back to. So you don't necessarily have to apply an entire environment file when you change configurations. You can use individual configuration options on the command line. So in this case, I'm going to upgrade to 110 and I'm just going to call out the debug flag. But I could easily provide any of the values shown in the values YAML file. Okay, so if I don't want to apply everything that's in the environment, but just a subset of that. Okay, so that's really all I had for this, just demonstrating some of the capabilities of using raw Helm. This is what the DevOps types would use to apply configuration on an ongoing basis once the system's up and running. We've been struggling lately to get just ONAP up and configured once, but this is kind of starting to look at, well, how do we manage and maintain that application as it's running so that we have resiliency, we have the stability that we expect out of this kind of carrier grade.
Mike, what is the source of that struggle?
Sorry, the source of getting
the struggle that you mentioned. You've been struggling. Why?
Well, originally when ONAP first got out the door, there was a struggle, right? It's typically took us many hours to deploy. We've passed that now. OOM goes a long way to help that in using the containers, and we do the configuration for the applications, but now we need the app teams to own that config.
So was that the problem, that you didn't, the configuration did not reside where it should? And are you suggesting changes to the different containers or to the different apps? What would be the lessons learned in that case for the teams?
I think we can start working on standardizing how we expose external configuration and in a consistent manner, so that we can share config like host names, credentials, things of that nature, right? We have to start organizing ourselves as a platform and not the individual applications that have kind of been built in somewhat in isolation, right?
Right.
So what happens when we pass in the external configuration is up to the applications teams, but we also might be able to benefit and share common libraries and things for doing config behind the scenes as well.
We're going to have a conversation about best practices for microservices. And I think you guys have learned more than anybody. Do you have any guidelines, suggestions that teams could incorporate to make this happen, the scalability and the deployability that you've advocated?
Yes, we can certainly. I'd love to be a part of those conversations. And I think we can bring what our experiences have been to date on this. And we are already working with some of the application teams. We have an effort working with SDC right now, trying to standardize that configuration. And we're working towards examples, you know, in the application, so that either the application teams can look at those examples, like MSO or SDC, and do their own config work, or we're very willing and open to working with the teams to do that, to define what their external config is and how we might expose it.
Mm-hmm.
This is great. And I also would like to add at this point, certainly we need to have one opinion on secrets. I mean, I know Vault is good, but especially it causes a problem when you want to leverage up and coming technology like service mesh, right? Which are deeply into Kubernetes, you know, and they provide value across the board of zero trust, you know, upgrades and everything, right? And it would be better at that point to leverage the power of the Kubernetes framework itself and the community behind it versus doing something one-off like Vault. Something we need to seriously think about. In fact, on service mesh, we made a presentation in the Santa Clara, you know, developer forum at Intel. In the OOM team. So, but this is fantastic. I think we should leverage the power of Kubernetes and, you know, maximize the value you're getting out of it.
Yeah, it's a complex problem, and there's already tools to do that, like or capabilities rather, yeah, in exactly. Kubernetes. So yeah, we should absolutely benefit on the many years of experience of, Google doing this, so that we don't have to deal with exactly. that complexity, exactly. right?
And
we
also
have a lot of work ahead of us, so we can focus on other areas.
Exactly. And also the community behind this is phenomenal. I mean, the support, right? You look at taking this and going to service mesh, like, I mean, you know, you can leverage a ton of their experience.
For sure.
Versus sort of going on one-off tracks, like, you know, for secrets, going a separate path and all those.
Yeah. So I think what we should do out of this meeting, if it makes sense, is, you know, we need to get the PTLs to buy into this, that this is important, that we work on standardizing the config and work on getting this into the Beijing release. There's a lot of effort being done already by the OOM project from various teams and contributors to do this. There's actually at least 8 or 9 outstanding patches that need to be merged from various components. So we're a good ways there already. But we want to work with the teams, and you know, it would be much easier if we can get the PTLs to say, yes, this is an important thing, and let's work together and try to standardize this. Like, for instance, on the decision, who owns the config, right? Where does it live? That's I think, the first important decision that has to be made here.
Yeah, Mike, this Parviz. So when you define your environment file and you list the ONAP components, like in this case, MSO and more, the individual projects, they have to take certain steps to make the project ready for Kubernetes integration, for deployment. Are those steps are already defined?
So we've already done this, right? We've done this for Amsterdam, and there's the Beijing is set out right now. In terms of, we've taken care of pulling these in. We wrote the deployment descriptors, or some of the teams have even written them with our guidance and assistance. So all these directories that you see for all the apps, that's already done. What hasn't been done really is, the best practices in terms of configuring. Right now, in some of the apps, we don't have config pulled in. MSO is the first example of that. What we had before is we had a bunch of wrapper scripts that deployed ONAP and a number of steps that had to happen before we could launch an application. We want to get rid of those. We want to use Helm directly and use it raw. To do that, we have to kind of work with the teams and start pulling the configuration into the Helm package environment. So it's the standardization we need to work on, not the enablement in Kubernetes. We take care of that.
So a good place to bring that up is on the Monday PTL meetings.
Okay.
I think this would be a good topic. And then you can get buy-in for who owns what. I think the project teams are probably going to want to own their own config, but if there's a repo for it, kind of like what we're doing with documentation, that may be an easy way to get people moving.
Yeah, that makes the most sense, I think, if we can do the config directory or a similar approach. The team should own this. We're just trying to help. And we're available as resources to do the work or assist the application teams and bring them up to speed. So, okay. So PTL is meeting on Monday. Then I can get David from OOM to drive that.
Yeah, it's open to other people participating as well, but just talk to Kenny and get on the agenda there. That's only a half hour call, but you could get probably a 10 to 15 minute slot and talk about what you need from the project teams. And I think get quick movement and decision from the PTLs.
Excellent. Okay, I will contact Kenny on that. Mm-hmm. Great. Well, thanks very much for the opportunity to demo this. And anyone has any questions, please feel free to reach out to me or any of the other OOM members. So, thanks.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Great.
Okay, we've got about 5 minutes left. Any final questions or feedback before we end? Okay, I'm going to wrap up and give you back about 5 minutes in your day. Thanks very much for the participation. And thanks to Parviz and Mike for leading the presentations.
Chris, I also shared the slides on the service mesh, which you presented in the Beijing Developer Forum. Perhaps we can discuss that topic also in the upcoming meetings.
Okay, let's get you on the agenda. And I can give you more than 5 minutes for it.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Yeah, bye.